Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Today is January 27th, 2022. Let the record reflect the time is 3:30 p.m. And just a general welcome, as this is the first committee hearing of the new year and in the second year of our legislative cycle. And today we have present Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Myers, and myself. Senator Hoffa and Senator Wilson are in a Finance Committee meeting. Let's all remember to turn off our cell phones or silence them. I'm checking mine, as I owe donuts already for another meeting I was in. So I would also like to point out and thank, I'm very grateful for Juliana Singh with Senate Records. Thank you for being here. Leo Steedel with the LIO. Thank you, Leo. And then I'd also like to introduce all of you and those who might be watching on AK Ledge TV to our new committee aide, Daniel Phelps. So I appreciate his, this is his first committee hearing, and I think we're off to a good start because I feel like we're very prepared. So, but we'll have grace for you, Daniel, if there are any slip-ups. So on today's agenda, we have House Bill 127, the Municipal Bond Bank, U.S. Loan and Bond Limits is the short title. Today, we'll have the bill sponsor and staff introduce the legislation and review a sectional analysis on the bill and offer a question and answer period for committee members. Are there any questions from members before we get started? Okay, so at this point, I will invite the bill sponsor, Representative Bart LeBon, and his staff, and Ritgers, to the table, please. And while you're getting seated, I just, Representative LeBon, I'd like to note that for everyone in the room, and so you know too, who is online, we have Devin Mitchell with the State Investment. He is the State Investment Officer of the and Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority Executive Director. And we have online Myron Dosh, and he is the Chief Financial Officer of the University of Alaska. And do we have people in the room that, do we have Luke Wells in the room? Okay, hello, Mr. Wells. He's chair of the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority. And then Renee Gayhart, are you in the room? I'm sorry I didn't meet you before we began. Renee is the director of healthcare services with the Department of Health and Social Services and knows all about Medicaid. So we thank those folks for being so members. If we have questions, and Representative, you're free to redirect anything we ask you. If they might be better to answer the question, we will be flexible about that. So please put your names on the record and tell us about your bill. And I actually, we met beforehand, and I think just an overview for those listening, those in the room, and for even members, we always are learning, right? And if you could explain a little bit about the municipal bond bank itself, or you could is it Mr. Mitchell do that too? I think just for us understanding why this bill is before us and how it might work. So put your names on the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for this opportunity to present House Bill 127. I'm Representative Bart LeBon. I represent Fairbanks House District 1. With me is my staff, Ann Ritgers. She will provide sectional and support in my lifeline. And I might just add, Madam Chair, that we do have Mr. Devin Mitchell in person here from the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank. And you know, as quickly as possible, I'm gonna do a overview, but I have very good expert assistance here with the invited testimony, and I think you'll appreciate why I will quickly bring them into the fold, if you will, with explanations of the bill and how it works. But from an overview, the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank provides bonding financial assistance on projects in Alaska to include regional health organizations. And we are looking to expand the capacity of regional health organizations to participate through the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank on projects. And Mr. Wells has a wealth of information about regional health organizations. And Mr. Mitchell has been with the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank for many years. and he can give you a history of the bond bank and how it works. So we're looking at helping regional health organizations with financing of projects up to 100% of the project cost. And we also, as you noted, we have the chief financial officer for the University of Alaska on the line. We want to expand access to the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank for the University of Alaska. Should it have an opportunity to refinance debt at a lower rate or seek financing on university projects through the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank, currently it doesn't have that access. So in a nutshell, that's the goal of the bill. And we want to provide any information the committee meets. And I'd like to thank committee members for meeting with me before today's meeting. Very good questions came from committee members. And fortunately for me, lifeline of expertise is very extensive for this hearing today. And I think you'll appreciate that any question you may have, we have an answer for you. And with that, are you looking for an invited testimony now, or would you like the sectional analysis? Madam Chair, your call.
Okay. Actually, I think before the sectional analysis, first I'll turn and see if any if you have any questions at this point of the representative. And then I think if it's okay with you, just so we understand better what it does, could we please have Mr. Mitchell come up to the table and just give us a history and understanding of the municipal bond bank and actually going back, so come on up, to when the regional health organizations were added in 2015 and why that adjustment is needed. So if you could just give those listening online and in the room and give us a lesson on the bond bank.
Sure. So for the record, my name is Devin Mitchell. I'm here in my capacity as the executive director of the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank.
Get the microphone a little closer there.
Thanks.
Yeah, you might need
what's that?
Pull it up.
Oh, he's already doing a good job. To avoid any confusion, because I testified in the prior hearing with Vice Chair Meyer, I also serve as the debt manager for the state of Alaska, and so I have multiple roles within the Department of Revenue. The bond bank is a public corporation of the state of Alaska that's existed since 1975. It was originally created because municipalities were having a hard time accessing capital markets. Alaska, if you lived in Alaska back then, you would remember that when you went outside the state, people couldn't believe you lived in Alaska because their view of the state was that people lived in igloos and had a dog team and had pet polar bears. And so they had a difficult time convincing Wall Street to lend our communities money if they had never heard of that community, but they at least had heard of the state of Alaska. And so the state of Alaska lends its credit support to the bond bank, and we're able to achieve lower interest rates on publicly offered bonds, pass through those lower interest rates to authorized borrowers that can use the program, which over the years has been expanded beyond just municipalities. There's a five-member board that I report to, and the chairperson of that board is here today, Mr. Luke Wells. There's three members of the board that are appointed from the public and the Department of Revenue Commissioner and the Department of Commerce Commissioner are their delegates. The bond bank has over the years issued 350 loans and not had a default. When you issue bonds, it's not a risked type of loan, and we've talked about this a little bit, that Representative LeBond's background was in commercial banking, and you have some expectation of default in your commercial loan portfolio, and really in our portfolio we have zero expectation of default for the types of loans that we're making. And that's how we go in. And we have a multi-tiered review process, both internally and externally. We start with staff reviewing projects. Then we have external advisors that review projects. And then we have market review of projects from rating agencies, from underwriting firms that would facilitate the sale of the bonds. And then finally from the investor that might consider purchasing the bonds. So it's been a successful model for a long time. And in our most recent year, the reason we were created was to provide lower interest rates to authorized borrowers. And in the most recent year, we saved $50 million for authorized borrowers by lowering interest rates that they would have achieved otherwise on money that was needed to either refinance or provide for capital projects. I feel like I've been talking for a while.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for your presentation. So I wasn't here in 75, I came in 82. But so when the bond bank was established, where did the funding come from to establish the bank?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Gray Jackson. The bond bank was funded through a series of appropriations from 1976 to 1986 that totaled $18.6 million. In those days, you could actually borrow money tax exempt and invest it taxable and keep the difference. So you could make money. And so the bond bank actually wound up making a little bit of money as a result of that from its reserve fund, that it borrowed money to put in a reserve fund, invested that money in governmental securities that earned more than the rate that we were paying on it and kept the difference. So that just provides for an annual earnings flow that provides for the operating costs of the bond bank. The bond bank has an annual budget of just over $1 million. The earnings from our cumulative net assets provides for that. There's no support from the general fund at this point. And otherwise, when we make loans, we're borrowing that money from third parties. And then when we borrow money, we use it to purchase the bonds of an authorized borrower, and then that borrower pays the debt service, which pays our bonds.
Can I follow up with a question, Madam
Yes,
Chair?
Please.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And so what kind of interest rate does the bond bank get, and what kind of interest rate do borrowers get?
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson. The interest rate varies, of course. It's a market-driven rate. And so the bond bank achieves a credit rating that's linked to the state's credit rating. So we've suffered along with the state of Alaska since fiscal year 2015 and the decrease in the price of oil and the resulting fiscal difficulties of the state. We're currently rated A1, A+ by Moody's and Standard & Poor's. In the current interest rate environment, there's been fairly significant compression. There's not a lot of difference between credit gradations, and so that's benefited the bond bank program and the state of Alaska, for that matter. So in the current interest rate environment, like a 20-year loan might be in the 2%, a little bit more than 2% probably, but in that zip code as far as what you would expect to be paying.
If I can follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
And what is the interest rate that you charge your borrowers?
Through the chair, we charge the same rate. We don't make money off of our borrowers. It's essentially a service that's provided to lower the cost of good Alaskan projects. So the benefit goes to the taxpayers or the users of a facility that has a revenue-based charge.
Right. I really appreciate that. So it's a net 2%, 2%. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Myers has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To kind of follow up on that line of questioning, since we're talking about regional health organizations and the University of Alaska, if you weren't an option for them, roughly what kind of an interest rate would they be looking at through the open market?
Through the chair, Vice Chair Myers. And that's a good question, that there's really been an evolution within the Alaska tribal healthcare financial awareness, I would say, over the course of the last 6 years. When we obtained the original authority for the bond bank to lend a regional health organization. The Tanana Chiefs Conference, which is the tribal health or the regional health organization that provides healthcare services around Fairbanks generally, and they had an outstanding loan that was 7 7/8%. They were able to they had issued bonds that had been privately placed with a group of what are called big boy sophisticated investors that are willing to take extra risk. The covenants that they had entered into required that they seek to obtain an investment grade credit rating every year. And every year they had tried and failed to obtain even an investment grade credit rating. And once we helped the Tanana Chiefs Conference restructure their means of committing revenue so that it was structured in a fashion recognized by the market for its true credit strength. And that original transaction they financed through the bond bank, and it saved something like $40 million for the Tanana Chiefs Conference, which allowed that money to go into Alaskan healthcare. But now the Tanana Chiefs Conference has been able to leverage that knowledge into obtaining a higher credit rating. And so at this point, the benefit is not as significant. Healthcare tends to price at a premium. And so if an entity has a similar credit rating to the bond bank, which they do, you would expect that there might be a more modest benefit, and there can be an administrative benefit because the bond bank has the knowledge. We issue bonds frequently. We're at this point the third most active issuer of municipal bonds in the state of Alaska behind the Housing Corporation and the Municipality of Anchorage. They can come to us, they can ease their administrative burden and save some money over the alternative of issuing independently. And for some regional health organizations, the benefit could be greater, and some it could be smaller.
Thank you. I'm just thinking, you mentioned specifically TCC, and they spoke to me about a year ago about the different expansions that they've been going through over the last few years. With the expansion of Medicaid either 2015 or 2016, that they'd seen a huge surge in patients and hence a huge surge in construction and the services that they provide. Now, in any other business, I would think that if you've got that much activity going on, that the banks would be almost competing to be handing out the loans. And so it makes me wonder just what the exact need is for it.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Vice Chair Meyer, when we worked with the Tanana Chiefs Conference, they did have a couple of loans with local banks as well. Typically, a local bank is looking for more of a mortgage-style loan. They want something to secure the loan. When you issue bonds, you're looking at more of a revenue pledge and a construct that allows revenues to be prioritized for use so that the bondholder is secured in the flow of funds from that revenue activity. So they're kind of this and that. As far as banks that are willing to underwrite bonds, there are banks that are, and these would be not banks in Alaska, but investment banks on Wall Street that would be willing to underwrite TCC's bonds. And TCC issued their last series of bonds independent of the bond bank, and it's successfully so. And so I could see that's in part because of how our statutes are currently constructed and some of the limitations that we have as far as how much of a project we're able to fund and the size of a project we're able to fund. So right now we can only fund 49% of a project, which if you only fund 49% of a project, now if I'm the borrower, I have to go figure out how to fund the other 51%. And there's a lot of effort that goes into constructing a bond issuance. So our typical process takes 4 to 6 months. And so now you're talking about doing that twice to accommodate an entity like the bond banks that can only fund a portion of your need. And if it's slightly more expensive to not bother with having two transactions, and it diminishes your administrative burden because you don't have to go through that process twice. That's what's pushed, that's in my view, in large part, what pushed TCC away from using the bond bank.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have a couple questions, and one of them is, we've talked about the university, we've talked about regional health organizations. Are there other categories of that you are working with as far as projects around the state? And Tanana Chief is not state government, so I'm assuming there are other private sector entities that are able to make use of your service, or do they, or are they better off just going to regular commercial banking?
We don't, to answer them in reverse, we don't work with any other non-political subdivision borrowers. We do have other political subdivision borrowers that we've worked with, joint action agencies, ferry authorities, and then communities. The university we've worked with in the past, but on a very specific basis for the power heat project, the coal-fired power and heat project on the UAF campus. We funded a portion of that project with bonds of the bond bank collaboratively with the university. But otherwise, we don't work with private entities. And I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, the regional health organizations are nonprofit tribal entities rather than what I would categorize. They're not a for-profit business per se.
Representative
LeBon. Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to add to that, I think I could safely speak on behalf of the Alaska Community Banking family that we don't view the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank as a competitor, but as a partner. They fill a niche that the commercial banking community really is not seeking to fill, that niche. Private sector banking for the commercial banks, and then the public sector with Alaska Municipal Bond Bank. So we're a partnership financing Alaska projects for the benefit of all Alaskans.
Representative LeBon, we discussed it earlier in my office, and just for those listening to understand, because some folks, Alaskans, might think, you know, why does the state have this? They should just go to the private sector banks. Can you please explain why a commercial banking institution wouldn't be interested in these kind of projects?
And thank you for that question, Senator. And it's not that we, and when I say we, commercial banking community, could not provide some financing for a regional health organization. Certainly could. But a commercial bank would seek a federal loan guarantee partnership if we were to pursue that. And Mr. Mitchell mentioned collateral. Banks seek collateral beyond loan repayment source, but also you try to back your loan with some type of a tangible asset, if you will. And one thing that banks try not to do is take possession of collateral any and every way possible. We don't want to take possession of collateral, particularly if it's a regional health organization located in, say, Bethel or Nome. Banks don't want to operate a regional health organization, nor do they want to be in a position of liquidating a piece of collateral that it's just not an easy thing to do to begin with. So if a bank were to participate in financing, it would seek a partnership. In my banking days, I partnered with the USDA, Small Business Administration, ADA, to name just a few, as loan guarantees for my loans. And typically my loans were private sector loans.
Thank you. Senator Myers?
Thank you. To kind of follow up on that line of questioning, Mr. Mitchell, I believe at the beginning you said that the municipal bond bank, your risk portfolio is effectively zero. And yet we're hearing about commercial banks shy away from some of these types of loans because they're worried about what happens in case of a default. And there's a little bit of a disconnect there. Could either of you fix that for me?
Representative LeBon.
Thank you. And through the chair, yes, Senator Myers. My pricing on a loan for for a regional health organization would be 2 to 3 times more than his. So I could safely say that if a borrower had a choice to seek financing through a commercial bank or the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank, and I was proposing financing at 6.5% or 7%, and the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank was at 2%, I would have to do one amazing sell job to convince them to come to me versus Mr. Mitchell. And the banking community understands that difference. We have to price, as was mentioned before, we have to price loan losses into our portfolio. We have a different type of overhead than the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank. So our margin, if you will, of risk and overhead is greater than the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank. So our pricing is going to be higher. And maybe you add more.
Again, through the chair, Senator Myers, I think there's also a structuring issue. As we've discussed, the banking industry has different structuring requirements for their commercial loan portfolios than those that are carried by a bond issuance, which is, as I said earlier, more of a revenue stream pledge. And so, and it happens all the time. I mean, that's normal. When you look at, and I mentioned this earlier, the Alaska International Airport System, those bonds are secured by a revenue pledge of the system, not a pledge of the terminal. There's not going to be a repossession of the terminal in event of a payment default. There's other remedies available to the investors. And so it's the bond market functions differently than the banking market. And that's some of what I think when Representative LeBron said there's a perception of risk, it means that it doesn't conform to their structuring requirements when it does conform to the bond market structuring requirements and in a high credit profile way.
Okay.
That's very helpful. I appreciate that. One more thing, and it was early, I'm not sure it was when Senator Gray Jackson asked a question. You kind of went through this almost like a flow chart of when a borrower comes to you, what happens. And I don't know if you have a flow chart like that you could provide the committee, but that actually just be before our next meeting would be helpful to understand, because it is a little bit different of a mechanism. And I think, unless there are any further questions from members, I think we would be ready for a sectional analysis, and we might have more questions for you, Mr. Mitchell, but thank you for coming forward. And now if Ann Singh would come forward, please. And we'll begin the sectional analysis.
For the record, Ann Ricker, staff to Representative LeBron. And this should be fairly short because there's only 3 sections to cover for this bill. Section 1 removes the project scope limitation of only heating or energy projects for the University of Alaska. In Section 2, there's going to be 2 changes that impact regional health organizations. The first change is removing the 49% project participation rate, and the second raises the single project cap from $102.5 million to $250 million. In the third and final section, there's 2 changes. The first raises the University of Alaska cap from $87.5 million to $500 million, and it also raises the cap for all RHO projects at the bond bank from $205 million to $500 million.
Okay, I have a question, because in Section 2, we're raising from $102.5 million to $250 million for a single regional health, and Section 3 is raising another cap, so it's a current $205 million. So why do we have 2 caps that we're adjusting for regional health organizations?
The one in Section 2 is specifically regarding a single project, so that would be one project that would go to the bond bank for financing. In Section 3, it's all of the RHO funding at the bond bank. So there might be multiple projects that the bond bank is working with at one time.
So it could be multiple health organizations with an S, or one health organization with multiple projects?
I guess it could be either.
Yeah, it would be more likely to be multiple regional health organizations versus multiple loans to one. Usually it's a standalone one event versus multiple loans.
Okay. And so I have, do either of you have a question? You both, Senator Myers?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. The headroom that we're raising here is significant, and I believe in the conversation we had a few days ago that the last time that this was,
excuse me,
that these limits were raised is about 2014-2015. Inflation hasn't been huge between now and then, so why are we having such a huge jump in the headroom? Were we butting up against it with some of the projects? What can you explain some of the rationale there?
Mr. Mitchell.
Yes.
Come on up.
Good question, and we'll bring Mr. Mitchell back to the table with your permission, Madam Chair.
Yes, come back to the table, Mr. Mitchell, and the floor is yours.
Again, for the record, Devin Mitchell. And in response to the Vice Chair's question, the right now we have, what, $104.3 million in loans outstanding through the Regional Health Organization program. The changes aren't coming about because of pressure accruing to the $250 million limit right now. It's because I think it's more, excuse me, revolving around the limitation of 49% of the project, and then the size of projects that are currently going on in the state of Alaska. There have been several $300 million plus projects for facilities in the state for regional health organizations. And so it really is just anticipating being able to respond in a meaningful way if there were a larger project that wanted to use the bond bank, and it would obviously be a credit-worthy project that wanted to use the bond bank in the future, and then having a cap that was able to fund both a project of that potential magnitude as well as the other smaller project that we anticipate and, in fact, have heard about from a variety of other smaller health organizations around the state. I know that at one point, and this was actually prior to the bond bank having the regional health organization project, in Kenai there was about a $40 million project, and there was a project in Yakutat and in the last couple of years. And there are a variety, and again, this would be more Luke's area of expertise than mine, but there are a variety of projects around the state where an enlarged cap and an enlarged authorization would just enhance the potential that it would provide value to a regional health organization financing of the future.
Before we bring Luke up, Devin, I wanted you to ask, because I understand that the health organization, the 49%, that was, I believe, 2015. And knowing that you've had a no default track record, I'm just wondering why did the legislature set it at 49%? Because it seemed like it might be difficult to, you know, go out and get the other half of the funding. So what was the thinking?
Madam Chair, it was really, it was in Senate Finance that they made the change. Angela Rodell was an assistant to Anna McKinnon, co-chair of Senate Finance. And Angela has a strong background in municipal finance. That's where she came from. She used to work for a financial advisory firm that actually I worked with her while she was there. And she made a couple of suggestions to the committee to diminish the perception of risk on a new program that they didn't have experience with. And so that's where the 49% came from. At this point, we've learned that what folks viewed as a non-investment grade program with Tanana Chiefs Conference, which I think is applicable to the other regional health organizations, is actually a highly rated credit rating at this point. And the low double A, high single A type category rating credit ratings are being achieved by these regional health organizations at this point. And we've had a couple of loans, both for TCC as well as the Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation, who we were working with at the time on the legislation that was building a $350 million facility in Bethel, and they had funding lined up for a portion of the rest of the project through USDA, which is something that most organizations don't have available to them. And so they had an ability to work within that allowance. They were amenable to the legislation being diluted and a kind of putting your toe in the water before you jump in the pool sort of experience. And that's really, I think, the basis of us. When I approached Representative Laban, I think that might have been the same discussion that we had, that it's a reasonable undertaking at this point to consider increasing the allowance so that we can be more effective if we're going to be in this lending line.
Okay, thank you. And I know the Senate Finance Committee will look at some of these things, but I do have some questions, and we're going to play a little musical chairs because I'm going to ask both of you to step down, and I'm going to ask Renee Gayhart to come on up and Luke Wells to come up, please, because I want to talk a little more about the health facilities, and I believe there could be a benefit to the state, and so I'd like to talk a little bit, and I'm going to start, Luke, by asking you how many regional health organizations do we have in the state, and how many have come to the bond bank to participate and get funding?
Okay, Madam Chair, Luke Wells, and I am the current chairman for the bond bank, but I've also been in tribal health for the last 20 years. So there are a total of 40 tribal health organizations in the state of Alaska. Six of them have hospitals in the state. There are 212 clinics in the state that'll range from 1,500 square feet on up to close to almost 15,000 square feet, depending on where you're at. And so the tribal health organization, the Alaska Tribal Health Organization, excuse me, provides health care throughout to the state, both for tribal members and in rural Alaska to non-tribal members also. So if you're out in Dillingham and Naknek, you're going to end up going to Bristol Bay. Or if you're up in Nome, you're going to go to Norton Sound, another one of the tribal health organizations. So this is not only both for tribal health, but also providing health care to anyone in rural Alaska for the most part. As for those that have come to the bond bank, YKHC heard about with the new hospital in Bethel, and then also, of course, the Tanana Chiefs. But we've had Yakutat, we could have done. We currently have Seward with Chigach Butte is a project. Search just did the $300 million bond offering on their own for the new hospital in Sitka, and they've got a variety of other projects that they're going to be building. We were unable to of course, meet that need. If we'd been available at the time, I think that would have come through the bond bank, given the opportunity. But there's a tremendous amount of opportunity here in terms of helping to improve the quality of care throughout the state, especially in the rural areas, to have this opportunity. And part of when they were talking about the structuring and why that's really important is that when the Indian Health Service works with a regional health organization for a new facility, what will happen on what they call a joint venture project is that the Indian Health Service will go to a regional health organization and say, if you build the facility, then we will fund the staffing package, which means that they'll pay for a certain amount through a Title V agreement, a compact, because it's a government-to-government relationship, that they will fund then to staff that. And there's a portion in that that will allow for the financing of the bonds. And so it's a very unique methodology in terms of being able to fund a lot of different infrastructure in the state. And we have multiple facilities that have gone through that. And we've presented to the credit rating agencies, gone through so that everyone understands why this is a solid credit risk. And that's been one of the really big benefits over the years. And there really is a huge financial benefit to the state to make sure that all tribal members receive their care from tribal health organizations.
Yeah, thank you for that. And so I think Mr. Mitchell talked about Tanah Chiefs was able to save $40 million, put it back in to care. And, of course, that could be higher quality care, training for staff, state-of-the-art equipment, those kind of things. So that helps the people. And so I'm glad you brought up the part about helping the state. And for those listening and for those of us at the table, and that's why I wanted Renee here to be here, because Senator Myers mentioned Medicaid expansion. Well, part of that is, you know, an increased number of people, but of the Alaska Natives that fall under that, if they get their care at a health care facility, a tribal health care facility, it is their care is 100% covered by the federal government, so the state match is not necessary. So, Renee, could you talk to us a little bit about that? And I'm sorry, I maybe should have given you, now that I'm thinking of the question in my head, you may have to get back with us, but are you able to give us any information as far as the difference in the savings that you might see, that we might see when Alaska Natives choose to have their care at a tribal health facility? And the reason, when you bring it down to the ground level, if you're in a let's say, Nome or Kotzebue or somewhere, and you need a particular procedure that the person might have to fly into a non-tribal facility in Anchorage, the state's going to be picking up half that tab. If we can provide, you know, that facility where that procedure can be done in Kotzebue, for instance, that it will save. So can you just talk about the savings that we've already seen when people go to the tribal health? And if you have any idea of how this might impact the Medicaid budget in the future, I'd be interested.
Sure.
Please put yourself on the record.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Renee Gayhart, Director of Healthcare Services, Department of Health and Social Services. This is good, right? You can hear? Okay, good. You did a great job explaining that, and that is what the department does through a couple of different avenues. So over the years, just for the record, too, I've been with the department and working with Luke and Devin and others for about 24 years now. So the state has a very vested interest and partners with the tribes in supporting that infrastructure development in a variety of ways. So those that have been around, you know, Medicaid reform's taken on a lot of different forms over the years. If you remember back with Senate Bill 61, we really supported infrastructure development with two long-term care facilities, one in Bethel, one in Kotzebue. So what that did at the time, they're both 18-bed facilities. So those 18 elders, both in Kotzebue and Bethel, were able to stay there, not transfer to Anchorage or beyond, and that became 100% federal funds. So the state does pay that tab and then basically pays in chase. We chase the feds for the 100%. But ultimately, 36 elders were able to get services close to home and not have to leave. That is just one effort. There's another effort through Senate Bill 88, where we assisted with residential housing. And what that allowed were 200 or more individuals to be housed on the campus at ANMC and receive services there. And then even with this, Senate Bill 46 originally, we were able to support. Our role within this is just to say, okay, if YK or Chagachmute or Surge or TCC come into the picture and want money from the bond bank, we work with Devin and others to say, we do a fiscal analysis. So we say, okay, if you build, and let's take the case of YK because they were the first one in with the $110 million. We'll say, okay, if there's an additional inpatient facility there that also has outpatient services, what is the offset to the state? And if we can serve everybody there without incurring the transportation costs and the out-of-state prices, we show what the savings could be to that $110 million. So basically, Medicaid becomes a payer at 100% to help with the revenue generation to pay back part of those loans. So the role that the department plays is really to always look for infrastructure development in those outlying areas so that individuals can receive services close to home at 100%. so that they don't have to leave. Because the other side of that is the state then, with Senate Bill 74, Medicaid reform, we implemented tribal reclaiming. If someone should leave and have to go to Anchorage, Seattle, or beyond, we then have to do reclaiming on prior period claims. We'd much rather invest in that infrastructure up front in those outlying areas and get that 100% and not have to chase dollars later. It's better access for the individuals. It reduces transportation, and it reduces all those administrative burdens to Medicaid to have to reclaim those dollars.
Thank you, Renee. It sounds like you've done some analysis as some of these proposals, and perhaps you could provide some examples if you don't know those numbers off the top of your head as you've looked at them and analyzed and decided this is the way to go, what kind of savings were projected, and maybe how that turned out. I also want to say to you, Mr. Wells, I really appreciate the fact that the regional health organizations have opened their doors to all members of the community. There were years ago, my husband was a medical director for the Fort Yukon Clinic when it was part of Tamnaw Chiefs, and that policy wasn't really in place at that time. And so there were families in the community where we had to get on a plane and go to Fairbanks for care. So it's really, really nice that the communities have opened their doors, and I just want to acknowledge that, and I appreciate that. Do members have any other questions regarding the health facilities while we have Mr. Wells and Ms. Gayhart up at front? Well, thank you very much. I think it's been helpful for people to understand the benefit to the state's budget that this could bring. Thank you.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, if you do need those numbers, I can get those for you, but it's been probably 4 or 5 years since we did that analysis.
Yeah, if you could provide that to Daniel, he could make sure that members have it for their packets. So
thank you.
Thank you very much, and we'll bring Representative LeBon back up.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mitchell and everybody else did a really great job of answering questions and explaining what the bank authority does. And it's been really great. But I think what may be important, so that in a nutshell, folks watching this hearing, you can read the sponsor statement so it's, you know, clear and outlined to the public exactly what the bill is doing. Because I read it, and I think it's really great. I know we all read it, and I think it would be important.
Okay.
If you don't mind, Madam
Chair. Oh, I think that's a great idea.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator. Going to test my reading ability here, so thank you.
You could hand it off to staff. If you
probably not a bad idea, but I'll go ahead and give it to staff. The bill expands authority for the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank regarding bonding capacity for both the University of Alaska, has been mentioned, and regional health organizations. Regarding the University of Alaska, the bill proposes two changes. Removes the project scope limiting the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank authority to only heating and energy projects. And you think just a few years ago, the university replaced its heating and power generation plant. So that was targeted for that project. It raises the university project participation cap from that dollar amount of $87.5 million to a new ceiling of $500 million. As has been mentioned, the ceiling is just headroom, and in the banking world, having financial headroom is important to have defined and known well before the project comes your way. If you're waiting for a project to come your way to define your headroom, you're going to be about going to be behind the power curve. Previously, the university used the municipal bond bank participation for funding of the combined heat and power plant of the university. Again, this change is intended to provide the university with expanded tools for financing or refinancing debt, not just the power plant, but any debt the university may currently hold, allowing the university to leverage the bond ratings of the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority if it's to their advantage. And thank you. And we were chatting a little bit earlier, and I can't remember which one of you I had the conversation with, but interest rates are starting to creep up. So that window of opportunity maybe is closing a little bit, but we still want the university to have that option going in the future. You don't know when that cycle of interest rate changes are going to benefit the university. Again, you create the eligibility now so that you're ready when it happens. And then secondly, regional health organizations, we're removing that 49% limitation on the financing to allow the municipal bond bank authority up to maximum financing for the project. Also raises individual project financing cap and combined project financing cap. So taken all together, this change is intended to expand opportunities for regional health organizations to use the I better take a drink. use the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank in accordance with existing statute AS 44.85.010. The bond bank provides capital funds through loans to regional health organizations when the Commissioner of Health and Human Services anticipates a state financial benefit and an increase in regional quality of care. Financial benefit is realized by the state by capturing additional federal Medicaid reimbursement, assisting the state and reducing Medicaid expenditures. So I would appreciate your support and welcome this opportunity to present House Bill 127 to your committee. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you for the suggestion, Senator Gray Jackson. At this time, you can stay up, Representative Baum, because I want to bring Mr. Dosh online, Myron Dosh with the University of Alaska. We delved a little bit in on the benefit to the state regarding the health regional health facilities. So I want to talk a little bit about the university, what benefit this might be to the state. And also, even though the interest rates have gone up, Mr. Dosh, and so you might not make it use of it right now. When they go down, or if they were down, what is the university considering using this for now that would extend beyond heating and energy? So if you could introduce yourself for the record and answer that question, I'd be appreciative.
Good afternoon, through the chair. This is Myron Dosh, Chief Finance Officer for the University of Alaska. I'm happy to say that the University of Alaska does support this bill. Has been mentioned, it provides an option for the university to borrow or refinance at lower interest rates, and that really comes into play in the difference in the credit ratings between the bond bank and the University of Alaska. As it concerns the university, kind of in the near term, we would be looking at a refinancing opportunity just given our debt portfolio. So in the near term, like 2 to 3 years, we do not have a near-term project in the 2 to 3 year timeframe, I'd say, for financing. But again, refinancing is very economically beneficial with interest rates being low right now. And again, this is would provide an option for the university. It would not necessarily require the university to access through the bond bank, but we'd be very pleased to have this option available for us. Frankly, it would just hit the bottom line and help us save money. So with that, I hope that answers your question. If not, I'm available for additional questions.
Well, and I'll just kind of state the obvious, but if you refinance and save, then you can turn around and use that, and you don't have to come back to the finance tables and ask for those dollars. Can you give us an idea? And I know it's just conjecture, but if you were refinance something, what kind of savings would you possibly incur that could be less that the state would have to provide to the university or that you'd have to charge in tuition to students?
Sure. To the chair, in my support letter, I outlined kind of a hypothetical that the savings might be here based on current credit spreads about 10 to 15 basis points on an overall loan. And that might be about, if you say a hypothetical $50 million bond issuance over 30 years, that would be about $50,000 a year in savings, or about $1.5 million over the life of the bond. So we're probably talking in that range of savings, given that example.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. You stated, okay, and you have a question for Mr. Dosh?
Yes, sir.
Okay, then I'll hold mine off.
Okay.
Go ahead, Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Dosh, I believe it was Mr. Mitchell that told us that part of the reason that we're raising the loan limit for the regional health organizations is because there are now projects that are happening that they want to be able to participate in. My question are there projects that the university is considering that would require the change in the loan limit that we are proposing now, or is this a just in case idea?
Through the chair, at this point, it's a just in case. We do not have a new financing project lined up right now. What we primarily have is refinancing opportunities in the next 2 or 3 years. So we're looking at this right now, again, just as a just in case.
Okay, thank you. Any other question? Thank you very much, Mr. Dosh. We appreciate it. And Representative LeBon, Mr. Dosh said the university is supporting this. They provided a support letter, I'm assuming. Having heard from the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank, they are also in support. But I have a question, Representative, if you probably know this without bringing them up, but since they support it, does that mean the administration as a whole supports it? Are they able to support it separately, and it doesn't necessarily mean the administration supports it?
You know, thank you, Senator, for that question. I would be confident that the chief financial officer of the university is speaking on behalf of the administration in this matter, because there's just no downside to the university enjoying this access to the municipal bond bank. There's just no downside.
Right. I could tell that he said the university supports it. My question was regarding the bond bank. Does the state administration, in other words, the governor, is he supporting it, or is the bond bank able to support something independently? It doesn't necessarily mean the administration is supporting it.
Yes, thank you, Senator, for the question. As I mentioned in your office earlier today, I've been working on this for 3 years now, and I have received no pushback at all from any state agency, any executive branch, any other player out there that would have a issue with the expanded authority through the bond bank as we presented. No pushback.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Mitchell, could you come up and just kind of complete that a response for me? Because just so we know how you operate as an entity, so if you're able to and your board is able to independently support legislation, or whether you can only speak in support if you have support from the governor.
Thank you. So again, for the record, Devin Mitchell, Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank. And it's a good question. The bond bank actually has a separate legal existence from the state of Alaska, like all public corporations do. And I answer to a board. I'm not answering directly to the executive branch, the governor, when I'm working on bond bank business. That said, I actually am hired by the Department of Revenue Commissioner, and as an investment officer, my hire was reviewed by the governor's office, and so it's a bit incestuous, if you will. So certainly I would never want to do anything that was not in lockstep with the administration, and would want to coordinate between the board of the bond bank and the third floor of the executive branch. And so in this case, we went through the legislation vetting process with the governor's office. And that was both in the prior chief as well as the current chief. There has been support for the legislation.
Okay, great. That's good to know. And thanks for explaining that, how that works. So are there any other questions for the sponsor? I feel like we've had a really thorough discussion, and I appreciate it. You know, you have a little short bill, and we could just make assumptions, but I think it's been really educational and good for all of us. So I appreciate it, and thank you very much. And so would you – thank you, Mr. Mitchell. And Representative Bond, do you have any closing remarks about your bill?
Madam Chair, thank you for this opportunity to present to the committee. Very thorough discussion, and I appreciate the support that I've heard from committee members, and thank you very much.
You are very welcome, and thank you. And I want to thank Ann Ritkers as well, and you can go ahead and leave the table. I just want to let members know that we're going to set this bill aside for now, but we are going to ask that if you have any amendments, that you please provide them to my staff, Daniel Phelps, by 5 p.m. Monday. And our next committee meeting will convene next Thursday at same time, same place, 3:30 right here, and 1 week from today on February 3rd. And what we're going to do, just to give you a heads up, we are going to revisit this bill, HB 127, and gather any recommendations of yours, and at that point decide what the will of the committee is. And then we also will be having a second hearing on SB 13, which is oil and gas property tax, and the sponsor of that bill is Senator Begich. He had a very short window to present his bill last year, and he has some additional new information, so we're going to let him have kind of the remainder of that hearing. So are there any comments or remarks from committee members before we close off? I have a remark, and I have a remark that I see my former committee aide in the very back, who is now staffed to my vice chair. Dawson Mann was our committee aide last year, and so you're free, Dawson, to coach Daniel as needed, but I think, Daniel, you did a very good job. Thank you today. And so seeing no other business to come before this committee, we will adjourn and let the record reflect the time is 4:32.